Possible Poetry, ein Podcast über neue Welten und Wege in der Poesie mit Dirk Hülstrunk. Possible Poetry, a podcast about new worlds and roads of poetry with your host Dirk Hülstrunk. Welcome to Possible Poetry Podcast, episode 15. My name is Dirk Hülstrunk, and my guest today is the Czech writer, critic, editor, and cultural journalist Wojtek Nemec. I'm really happy to have you here. So I would just like to introduce you a little bit to our audience. So he's been a resident writer of Hessischer Literaturrat at Villa Clementine in Wiesbaden in November 2025. Mm-hmm. And he has quite a unique style of writing, experimental, psychedelic, grotesque, metaphysical prose, and mixing different genres. He has published a mosaic novel, Opus Pictum, a cybernetic romanetto neocortext, for which he won the Bohemil Poland Award in 2019, followed by the eschatological novel Necropotence, Death in Progress. He is currently finishing a dystopian grotesque set in the near future called Kompotaze. He has published essays, reviews, fiction, and reports from public reading, and several times a year he interviews a personality from the literary world. He has worked as a freelance writer editor for the literary magazine Tvar and is currently employed as an in-house editor at Academia Publishing House. So welcome again to Possible Poetry, Wojtek. And for the beginning, we would like to hear a little excerpt of a prose text you write while traveling to Germany. Maybe we can start off with that.
Okay. Hello again. I'm glad to be here. It happens that, thanks to the whimsies of fortune, one is torn from the cycle of ordinary work and thrown into the whirlwind of a completely different kind of work. Among the culture and other precariat, the terms from work to work or work from dawn to dusk have become established, both of which are included in the code of conduct of the corporation called Life Limited, and or in the thesaurus of the national wealth of the Czech dominion, as you wish. Fortunately, this completely different kind of work is work for reward, work that is more or less dreamt of and secretly loved, much like when we love our eccentric hobbies that plunge us into solitude, which is why our significant others are unknowingly jealous of these habits, as they steal their free time and the peace and quiet of domestic coexistence. With this mindset imprinted, we travel by bus over the hills, and after crossing the Czech-German border, we observe a change in the mental and even economic fabric of the population. The birch-plastered cottages of the 70s and 80s, now rebuilt into warm whorehouses, certainly with frack pole on which either the Czech flag or the flag of the American Confederacy flaps, which is extremely suspicious to us, are suddenly replaced by eco-friendly and fancy design and mindful farmhouses, now converted into Hanseatic loft and rural and stylish residences for wealthy rentiers or retreats for CEOs of multinational companies. Or you drive past even older farmhouses, which still subtly remind you of the 70s and 80s, but each of them has solar panels on the roof. Each of them has a blue flag with yellow stars on the lawn, next to which stands a huge windmill, a sea of windmills in the wide German countryside, a brutal SUV parked nearby, a sea of parked SUVs in the sea of glittering solar panels, and on and an ocean of slowly rotating turbine blades.
Okay, so that was the first part of a piece you're writing about your travel to Germany to the residence you had at Villa Clementina, and it's you can already hear that it's quite a unique style you have there in writing about it. So is that your typical style of writing? Would you say that?
I don't think so. It's a generic journalism. It's not exactly my novelist style of writing. It's more accessible, I think, to readers.
But still, it's quite far from like regular journalist writing, maybe. I would say. And it's a very personal style. And what struck me, of course, it's a very slow and winding language that actually reminds a little bit of the 19th century writings. The first thing that came to my mind was Edgar Allan Poe, actually. So I don't know if there's any connection to this kind of writing for you.
Cool. I love Edgar Allan Poe, by the way. It's very subjective. I admit that. But first of all, I really love decadent style of writing and decadent poets at the end of the 19th century. So you are right to think these things about this. But it's also I like also postmodernism in the term of allusions and jokes, and I think it's a joke. My writing is a joke, but in the in the best sense of this term. Yeah.
Okay, and it also another idea I had was the kind of writing which with this slow and winding sentences is also it reminds me of the pace of walking, actually, rather than driving. Because driving is very fast and you could go from one place to another, but of course you could have traveled even faster by flying into to Germany, but you decided to go by bus, which is already a slower way of traveling. So what was that? Why did you decide to take the slow road to Germany?
Oh, it was the cheapest one. It's that simple. Yeah. Okay. Generally, I like rhythm of the texts, and I like the rhythm of traveling by train or by bus. It's like stream of consciousness, maybe. And it's very inspiring to travel by anything, and I like writing during traveling. You know, the pace, the rhythm, the change of landscapes behind the windows. It's very inspiring, and it's a flow. It's state of mind to travel so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And you're writing this text also while you were traveling?
No. But I was reminiscing the way to Wiesbaden. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was the exact feeling to while traveling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting because you can also feel that while traveling. It's not only the landscape that changes, but it seems to be the reality that seems to be changing also a little bit somehow. The realities I think and also your other writings, your perception of reality is a very important thing. It's more like a psychedelic experience, as you said. You can also see that in this little part, I think. So maybe it's a little bit reminiscent, even though you say it's a journalistic rather take on.
In a sense, yeah. Reality is a very vague term. and it's very complex to perceive reality. It's I don't understand reality, you know. I consider myself as a surrealist, yeah, kind of jerk, and writing is also a very complex process. While the thoughts are, you know, stomping and trampling over the things and notions and even people, maybe. It's crazy to live. Yeah.
Okay, so before we go a little bit deeper into your poetology, I would like to ask you, of course, about your residency in Germany. You're part of the residency program of the Hessische Literaturrat, and I think it's connected to the Literature House in Prague also. So there's an exchange project, and I have been also part of that exchange project, living in Prague for a month. So it's great that you came to Germany this way. So what was your intent to do in Germany? What was your plan to do here?
Yeah, my plan was to finish my fifth or sixth novel, I don't know, which is called Kompotace, and it's a hybrid of compost, computerization, and it's a Joycean word. Mm-hmm. It merges many images to the one term or one word, and I like this stuff. I like polyphony. I like polysemantics in writings, and it's very, yeah. I know my readers don't like that, but I like it very much. It's freedom. Hmm. It's an overwhelming freedom to think like that, to write in this way, and it's liberating. It's so vast. It's so intense. And I hope my readers could feel the same. Yeah.
And does the residency itself, like being in another country, does it have an effect on your writing somehow?
Oh, I don't know. I'm an introvert, and I was very plunged into myself while I'm writing. So I don't think so, but I really loved the birds in the park nearby, parrots and goose-like creatures from Africa. It was very cool, and I like birds. You know, and ornithology is my favorite scientific field. So yeah. Very cool.
Okay. Well, so you were really sitting in this residency and writing what you already planned out. And how far did you get?
Just a little bit, 10 or 11 pages of words, manuscript. So it wasn't like I have expected. I thought that I would be able to write 20 pages. So yeah, it's okay. I was busy. I was busy in doing other stuff, you know, for academia or literary magazine Tvar. So yeah, it was intense, but yeah, it was okay.
So it was kind of a free space, but you always you also had to do some other work. You said like you're an editor for different magazines and a publishing house, I think. So that sounds like a lot of work. But you did have, I think, at least one reading in Wetzlar. Yeah. So how was that going? What did you read there?
It was so huge. I felt like a rock star back there in Wetzlar, because the microphone and the amplifier was very, very good. It was so intense, so it was madness, you know. And people were surprised that this thin guy like me was able to do performance like this. Yeah, it was surprising. Yeah.
Okay, great to hear. And poets and writers should be pop stars sometimes. I think it's a good idea.
Underground stars.
Underground stars, yeah. And of course, it's great if you have a like a complex language that people do get into it. You know, and of course, it needs some time. But I think
Yeah.
some people really like it still.
If you change your tone of voice and just modes of saying that and this, and it's very entertaining, I think. It's much more accessible than to read it to yourself.
Okay, we already started to talk a little bit about your literary approach, about your language and your interesting mixture of old romantic language from 19th century, but also postmodern language. So that's quite a range of language. And you also said you're drawn to surrealists, to even Dada modernists, and I read the terms experimental, psychedelic, grotesque, and metaphysical prose. So
Yeah.
what exactly is, especially what is the psychedelic part of that language?
I like transformative language. I like to transform language into something new. I like reinventing language and reinventing modes of or ways how we think, how we think, how we feel about the world and about society. And I like complex structures and of sentences. I like modernists' syntax, which is very complex, but I like it. It's very impressive, and maybe my way of thinking is similar to this. Wide structures or complex structures of modernist writing. It's just I feel that it's the essence of my work. Yeah, and I don't think modernist approach is a dead end. I don't think it
Yeah, you talk
is.
about modernist approach. What exactly do you mean by that? Because there's also postmodernist approach, so that's something different, I would say. Yeah.
It's something different. I mean that the polysemantics of prose, polyphonic, and I don't know, allusions, parody, polyphony, it's merged together, and I know it's anachronic, but I just feel it that way. It's so similar to my mindset, or my mentality. Yeah.
And does it also mean that the language itself creates some reality of its own, or some landscape even of its own? So you don't really have even need to have the outer reality or landscape. It's a very inside thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. If you change the general way of building sentences, if you disrupt the common sense or the common way how to express yourself, and how do we say these things, you know, the idioma, phraseology, and if you transform it in any way, you also transform our way of thinking, and the world is changing, because the world behind the text is a new world. So I feel like a demiurge, you know.
Okay, and creating something, your own reality, and even changing the real world. Then, yeah, of course,
it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, that's something very cool, definitely. I'm really interested in, you have these great titles of novels, and what is it, Compotatze? You explained what that really means. It's really like this Joycean word where there's really many different layers of words inside and many different possibilities to interpret it. You also wrote something like a cybernetic romanetto, neocortex.
What is a
cybernetic romanetto?
Romanetto is a genre in Czech literature. It's a short story about some grotesque or fantasy like or science fiction like from 19th century by Jakub Arbes. It's a Czech literature stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's also an allusion to Ladislav Klíma, who wrote Groteskní romanetto, which means grotesque romanetto, and I pushed it to another semantic field, calling it kybernetické. It means kybernetics romanetto, because I like also cyberpunk and dark science fiction stories, dystopian stories, and so on. So this neocortex is about some, it resembles the movie Tetsuo. It's a Japanese movie from 1991, I think, and it's a surrealistic cyberpunk, weird, very very weird, and also funny movie, and it's inspired by that film. And also I like music while I'm writing. I often use music as a motor, or how to express it, to dive into the story, to dive into the system or structure of writing. Yeah, music is very, very important to me.
What kind of music then?
In the case of Neocortex, it was Godflesh, industrial metal band. No,
okay.
it's very inspired by it. Yeah, I admit it.
Okay, and you already mentioned the word grotesque a couple of times. So what does grotesque actually mean for you? Because it seems to me like a grotesque is also a kind of way to bend reality to a different form.
Yeah, it's the main issue of grotesque way of thinking is the transformation. I like all sorts of transformation of language, of images, or hallucinations into another hallucinations, overlapping worlds, you know, funny and horrific topics merged together. So it's like an alchemy, I think. The second meaning is that grotesque means something just funny, you know, in the contrast with horrific or terrifying scenes or visions.
So you really do mix these both parts, like the horror, horrific, maybe dystopian things, and with a strange kind of humor. Then is that what do you mean?
Exactly.
Okay. So that sounds really, really interesting. And I understand that you're really also inspired by like genre fiction, like science fiction or crime or horror novels. Is that true?
Rather movies.
Oh, movies, yeah. Actually. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's more influencing.
And is also the style of writing, is it then cinematographic in a way, or more the themes that come from the movies?
No, I don't think my books aren't able to be adapted by film industry or film media. No, it's not possible. But the imagery, or some iconics, it's similar to this topoi, or how to express it. Yeah.
So but it's not, rather not, like creating like a film in your mind than creating a real film.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, I understand. You are also writing that like ambiguity is very important for you. That it's not. Mm-hmm. That language can be very different things at the same time. Maybe mm-hmm. Or realities can be very different.
Yeah.
Why is ambiguity so important? I think that nowadays people really like to have non-ambiguity very much.
Yeah, you are right. You are right.
So it's quite difficult, especially for younger people, to endure ambiguity, especially of language, you know. So why is that so important for you?
Maybe it's my revolting against mainstream, because mainstream is very... very focused on instant effects or instant impact of your work or of art, and I really don't like the concept that literature should be a commodity, some kind of resource. It's not. Literature lives by itself, and it's much more complex, you know, that reality is also very complex, and we shouldn't reduce the complex reality to simple journalist, you know, cliches, or I don't know. I feel the tendency of nowadays or contemporary literature to reduce complex reality to journalistic banalities, and I really hate it. And so I've decided to do it completely different. And also my style of thinking is very different from this approach, this journalistic approach to write novels, for example. I really hate it. Literature should be literature, not some kind of product or I don't know, some kind of conformity to please audience. It's so stupid. Most of the time it's very stupid. These novels or stories or, you know.
But of course, a lot of the newer prose writing is also very much connected to like autofictional, autobiographical writing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, understand that's not what you do, really. Or is it the autofictional part? Is it in there too?
I think autofiction is old as literature itself is. Autofiction is, you know, it's literature. Everyone writes about his or her life. It's always subjective. It's always an ego document. Or I also feel that my latest novel, Necropotence, is very, very autofictional. So it's a very you know, fashion term, how to reduce the complexity of literature to simple or common audience.
There is another thing I would be interested in. I understand that one of your works is also for a scientific publisher. Is that right? So yeah, does science have any role in your literature? Is it just a job?
It's just a job, but some zoologist or you know, botanical issues appear in my writings, but it's just a brief inspiration of some kind of animal or some kind of flower. It's just occasional, you know. It's not structural.
But you do think about future somehow, and of course the future we all know will be influenced by technology, by science, like especially of course now AI will be a strong influence. In fact, you translated this first text a little bit by with the help of AI. So do you think about these developments in your writing?
I don't use it in my novels. It's I don't trust it.
But do you think about the influences of that in the future, like because if you say your next novel is about the near future, so
but it's a skeptical inspiration by technology and artificial intelligence. It's ambiguous, you know. You cannot say if it's good or bad. It's complicated.
So you have more like a romantic approach to technology and language, maybe.
It's rather romantic. Yeah, okay. I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So maybe let's also talk a little bit about your influences on your writing. So what kind of writers or art, you mentioned music and film already, but what kind of writers did influence your style of writing?
Well, I think the core of my inspiration is based on James Joyce. I think that his latest novel, Finnegan's Wake, was a mistake, but Ulysses is so cool. It's so cool novel. Every time I look into it, it's so overwhelming. It's so intense and great to read it. It's superb.
I agree 100%. Ulysses is the thing, really. But why was Finnegan's Wake a mistake?
Because it's too radical, I think. I think Joyce decided to get over the edges and to get on the other side of literature, which is so it's so hermetic or hermetic.
It's really kind of unreadable, you know. I think.
It's readable. I think it's I think it's even translatable, but it's just too much. It's the play with words and semantics. It's too crazy, you know.
Okay.
It's literature is also a communication, and it doesn't work, you know, the communication between the text and reader. It's insane, I would say. Yeah.
Okay, it's just too hermetic, you'd say. Okay. But outside of Joyce, is there anything else, maybe?
Yeah, of course, many authors, and for example, Italo Calvino, with his cosmic grotesques. It's so funny and transcendental. It's very trippy. It's psychedelic and also very funny. And for example, William S. Burroughs, his Naked Lunch. It's so liberating, this kind of texts, which merges poetry and prose into a new, you know, concept. And it's also very, very trippy. I like psychedelics. Sorry.
So did you also try out these cut-up aesthetics somehow?
No. It's not my tendency. It's I used to think about it, but it was so straightforward to cut my texts. No. It's not my style.
And if you go to like the Czech writer scene, is there anything that inspired you?
Yeah, of course. Jachim Topol is a very, very cool author, and his works are magical. I love his work. Or Ladislav Klima, it's from the beginning of 20th century, a philosopher and a novelist and poet. It's very nonconformist, and it's very brave. It's very also challenging in a way of thinking about world, and it's very solipsistic. Yeah.
Okay.
I admit.
Well, it's good also for us to know that, because it can be an inspiration maybe for our readers as well. They can check.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. In 2026, Czechia will be guest of honor at the Frankfurt Book Fair. So what do you expect from that event? Will you be part of it at all?
I don't fit in it. I'm too maybe extravagant for this event. The mass media or media isn't interested in me and in my novels. I'm, you know, I feel like an outsider, but in the best way, I feel free, and also I feel frustrated. But it's it's okay to feel these two different, you know.
So you're not really connected to a kind of a literary scene in Czechia, or are you? Is there a group maybe you're connected to?
I watch it from afar, I think. I know it very, very thoroughly, but I'm not a part of this and I will never become the part of this mainstream media or mainstream literature. It's too complex to address some audience with this kind of work. It's very minority focused stuff, you know, and it's okay. But I think that mainstream should be able to reflect itself by admitting that there is some kind of literary, I don't know, underground, which is independent. And nowadays, I feel that mainstream media and mainstream literature is ignoring this whole field of non-mainstream literature. It's a big issue, and it's a big problem. You know that mainstream literature is so obsessed by itself. And it's so isolated in conformity and predictable concepts, and I don't know.
Yeah, we also see it in other fields. It's like the mainstreamization of society, you know, in general, in all fields, you know. And so it's of course the possibilities of being different, you know, are getting smaller and smaller, and of course,
that's a problem.
Also to get it published. But you did get your books published so far, and I hope you get your next book published as well. So there is an audience for that, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. So for the finishing off, we would try to hear the last part of your impressions, of your travel impressions. Maybe you can read that.
On the other hand, once we decide to go somewhere, we should make sure we get there, and not to not get anywhere, as it usually happens. And so we spend half a day on the bus with mystery travelers who will fade away once they reach their desired destination, blending in with the myriad sulfur dioxides floating in the air. A tall young teacher with robust glasses and tights, trying to peer into an unknown book, but always ending up scrolling through social media. A terminally tobacco addicted Asian guy whose smile lifts his riz to divine heights. While sitting and snoring, he resembles a standing sleeping stone. With his wife and child, he video calls in unknown languages almost the entire voyage, traveling for dizzying hours through the German countryside. Hundreds of meters above the valley, the bus wedged into the highway between lines of gas stations and deserted rest stops. A Ukrainian mother and daughter, both so heavily made up and duck-faced up and sex-dolled up that they are significant nearbys, unless they are from the realm of illusions, since nowadays only madmen and or desolate crowd members cultivate more or less useful relationships. We'll never recognize them again. Shoving into the backrests, voices in various dialects and accents of German, Schlecht and Richtig and Genau and Doch and Komisch, our dude repeats phrases that, as recommended by his cosmopolitan friend, will suffice for all linguistic operations. Sleep, a series of sleeps, brief gaps, reading interlaced with sleep deprivation, sleep intoxication, fog enveloping the landscape, thoughts passing like buses, like buses, like buses, the smell of bodies, unwashed foreign bodies bumped in seats, the sign, "Please fasten your seatbelts." Inability to fasten, the belts irretrievably broken, and in any case, if the accident occurs, the body will only be strangled by the belt. Its vital organs spill out, it will collapse. Or a fall into the abyss, the roof cut off by a bridge, the heads of fellow passengers severed, a whole gallery of decapitated bodies, heads scattered in the ditch, wireless headphones still ringing in their deaf ears, Bluetooth blues, pop house, techno podcasts, Taylor Swift's mediocre country pop, darkness in the fog, or fog in the darkness, our guy merges into one. The bus passes, buses and strudels of gas stations and roadside casinos and pulls into the terminal. Our man stands in Wiesbaden, hallucination overlapping another hallucination, reality plus reality, hopelessness, distress. Better to stay in the mirage, not to go insane from it.
Well, thank you, Wojtek, for this second part of the travel to Wiesbaden. Yeah, it does get a bit surreal in between. but it's also really interesting and funny. So thank you very much for being on this podcast. I think it was a very interesting talk about your style of writing and about how to form language and reality. I wish you good luck for your next novel, definitely.
Thank you.
Hope that we can maybe meet in reality sometime. That would be great, because now we missed each other in Wiesbaden. So you listen to Possible Poetry Podcast, episode 15. My name is Dirk Hülstrunk, and my guest today was Wojtek Nemitz from Prague. Thank you again for being on the podcast, and hopefully we'll meet again. And thank you also for Hessischer Literaturrat for supporting this podcast. Okay, so that was it, and I wish you a good time, and well,
thank you,
a good Christmas and New Year time, of course.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to Germany.
Possible Poetry.